We've made some experiments, or did some experiments, made some measurements. And as I noted in the last lesson, in this example, we've done four runs in an L4 Taguchi experiment. And there's three factors at two levels each. And there's eight possible, but we only made four runs. And what do we do with this now to learn information about all of the different factors as if we'd run a full factorial? Well, once we get the analysis, and this is just the summary of that table showing the A, B, and C levels that were set up in our recipe. And then the Y1 is our reading, that we made one reading for each of the runs that we made. Now, if I'd run multiple replicates, it would be Y1, Y2, Y3, and so on. And we could then add those up into these MSD calculations also. So in this particular case, we want as bigger as better. So it's 1 over Y1 squared plus 1 over Y2 squared, so on. So we've got four readings there. So it'd be 1 over 35 squared plus 1 over 25 squared, and so on. And that's going to allow us then to calculate the different averages that we're interested in. But the trick is that on our way to getting the signal-to-noise ratios, is that we want to combine these four runs in pairs in different orders such that we can isolate just factor A, A1 versus A2. And then we're going to run factor B, B1 versus B2. And get my pen. If you notice, A1 is in runs 1 and 2, so that's 35 and 25. So that would be 1 over 35 squared plus 1 over 25 squared divided by 2. It would be the signal-to-noise ratio just for A1. And then likewise, I've got A2 is in runs 3 and 4. And so it would be 1 over 39 squared plus 1 over 27 squared. Gives us the MSD value, and we can calculate signal-to-noise ratio. On the other hand, B1 is split between runs 1 and 3. So that's 35 and 39 versus 25 and 27. And then C1 is 35 and 27 versus 25 and 39. So I did three different sets of pairings of the four numbers in order to give us information about the factors A, B, and C independently. That's the analysis part of most any design of experiments, is looking at these different factors while isolating and balancing all of the other ones. So to run this out, I end up with these Y values averaged. I also end up with the mean squared deviation values and the signal to noise ratios for factor levels A1 versus A2 and their totals. Let's take a look at the numbers that come into this. And I end up with signal to noise ratio values, 29.55 versus 30.36. Now, what I'm looking for is greater than 3 dB. And decibels is the units, but it basically is my signal-to-noise ratio has to show a significant difference. And 3 is defined as a significant difference. Bigger is better. But this comes into play when I can do the plot, basically, is taking those exact same values and on my response side, and I'm plotting A1 versus A2 and so on. So B1 and B2 gave me this 37 versus 26 signal-to-noise ratio. 37 versus 26. And on my response. So it's given me the biggest change going from B1 to B2 than the other ones. But likewise, I know that it's significant because it's just barely greater than 3 decibels. 31.37 minus 28.3 is 3.07. So I have a significant change, and that's where that 3 dB comes in. is that it's statistically significant. Whereas the change here is it's a little less than 1, 29.83 to 3.009 is also very much less than 1. Neither of those really matter if I set it at C1 or C2. There's no significant change in the resulting value, given the sample that we ran. So here I'm plotting the Y bar in the average response when I'm setting A1 versus A2, B2 versus B1, C1 versus C2, and so on. So it gives us a magnitude of the change in response. And what we're looking for is the one that gives us the biggest change. And that's the one we want to control first. Then we look for the second largest, control it, third largest, control it. Now, if they're less than 3 dB, then it choose which level to use depending on which is more economical. So maybe the less expensive material, or the shorter time, for example. Those would be factors we would go into. But if we're looking for larger is better, then we would want to pick the larger signal-to-noise ratio, which is level 1 for factor B, and factors A and C, we would pick the economically more useful one. So if it didn't make much difference if we set it for different pressure or for different set times, we would set it at level 2 for each of those. If throughput was important to us, we'd leave it at 6 seconds versus 9 and run it at level 1. So the practicality comes into play when you don't have that greater than 3 dB change. All right, so in this case, I know I want to take the lower mold temperature, because that was the, if I remember right, level B1 gave us the highest response, the highest strength. And so we're going to set it at 65C, but the other two, the pressure and the set time, can vary depending on economic or logistics patterns. It can go either way. So in this particular case, we would run another experiment setting the mold temperature at 65C, where factors A and B would be set, say, at level 1, if those were the economically viable ones, and see if the results match or are better than the results that we got from the experiment, the confirmation run. And once again, the set of steps to do this. Once I have the results, I figure out which factors have the biggest change in the response. Those are our highest signal-to-noise ratios, and greater than 3 dB is a signal that it is significant. And then the response table, or that simple graph, is a great way to just visualize the changes that we're dealing with, and then draw conclusions. Run a confirmation run to verify the results you got. And then usually, if you do the experiment well, you probably create a couple more questions or a couple more factors that you want to experiment with. It's that iterative approach to these types of experiments. So how could we improve this? The simplest one would be run replicates, get more readings, because we know that measuring impact resistance probably has some measurement error in it. So taking 5 samples and averaging those would minimize that effect of those measurement errors on our results. Maybe there's different mold cavities that play a role in this thing, and there might be a handful of other things we can use to help us further optimize the strength of this molded part. So next we're going to talk about what happens when that assumption of interactions isn't really true. If we're assuming that the main effects all act independently, when in fact they don't, then we have some problems. And let's talk about that next.